Good evening. We're back again after a little technical difficulties. This is Paranormal Investigator Radio with Peter Leonard, Dr. David DeProspero, and Rich Nicodem. We have a lot of interesting things on the board tonight. We're going to discuss the latest and greatest in the paranormal community. A few things that we have on the drawing board. A little bit of that technology stuff. And whatever else tickles our fancy.
Phone lines are now open. In North America, call toll free 1-888-429-5471. International callers, please dial area code 530-763-1594.
Welcome back to Paranormal Investigator Radio. I'm your co-host, Rich Nicodem. With me is Peter Leonard and Dr. David DeProspero. Did I say that? I always say your name incorrectly for some reason.
DeProspero.
DeProspero. And I'm never going to get it now because...
Someday.
Yeah, no, see, you've jinxed me. You've jinxed me. Hey, interesting poll I came across, everyone in the listening audience. I was online doing some research, as I do just about nightly, and they came across a very interesting fact, or if you want to call it fact, because... You know, you can just about believe everything that's on the internet.
It's
all true. They can't post it on the internet unless it's true, right?
That's right.
That's right.
So there's an article. It's actually on the Huffington Post, so I don't know how much credibility you want to carry with it. But the article is called Spooky Number of Americans Believe in Ghosts. And this was an actual poll done by the Huffington Post. And basically, last year they polled over 1,000 adults and asked them, do you believe in ghosts? And a surprising 45% revealed that they do believe in ghosts. They do believe in spirits of dead people that come back to certain places and situations. When asked if they believe there is life after death, 64% responded yes. So maybe that's why there's such a big growing number of ghost hunters out there these days that we come
Absolutely.
Across.
We've had our own impromptu run-ins with that question in public events before.
We had a gentleman... run up to our booth at one of our conventions, and he said, do you guys really believe in this paranormal crap? And he didn't say crap, of course, but in front of the whole crowd of people. And Pete turned around and walked away, and I was left with answering the question. And, you know, by and large, the amount of people that we run into really do have a belief that there's something out there, and they have an understanding that there's more going on than we can understand.
Well, this article gets even better because they have one more published statistic on here. 43% of people don't think that ghosts or spirits can harm or interact with living people. So unlike movies like Paranormal Activity and Scary Movie and that thing where the ghosts come out and harm people and rip their arms off and possess them and all that kind of stuff, most people don't believe that's actually true.
Okay, so let's recap that. 45% believe in ghosts.
Correct.
And what percentage believes that they can't interact with us?
That is 43%.
Well, less than half, I guess.
Yeah, but if you think about it, here's another statistic that they published. 59% of adults don't believe they've ever actually seen a ghost.
Well, that I can imagine. I mean, that's pretty rare to actually see something. Even with us doing it, you know, weekly. How often do we actually see something? Not very.
Well, we saw something over the weekend.
What did you see?
We did.
It was a big, colorful pen.
Okay, let Pete describe this one.
Well, we were on an investigation, and we kept seeing shadow figures, something very common. And there were five or six of us in a bedroom looking out towards the hallway, and we saw what looked like a shadow step out and then step right back into the room, almost as if it was, oops, they're still there. So we're watching intently. Meanwhile, I'm motioning to the camera, making all kinds of hand gestures downstairs for them to start marking the time because we've seen something. Now, Rich, on the other hand, thought we were busting his chops. And that's when he decided to play a little prank on us.
Oh, boy.
You want to take it from there, Rich?
Well, I was downstairs manning the station. We had a brand new DVR system, and I was just in awe of how well it worked with all the cameras. And so most of the group was in one bedroom, and Pete's back was to the camera, and everyone was kind of huddled on the bed. So I kept seeing Pete make these, like, gangster signs, peace signs, and all this stuff in front of the camera. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, it's after 2:30 in the morning. What are these guys doing? Are they just up there having fun, or are we actually investigating? What I didn't know, that Pete was trying to signal to me that there was stuff happening, and he wanted me to watch the camera. I didn't know that. I just thought he was messing around. So I decided to, with the permission of the homeowners now, I got permission before I did this.
Of course.
I started to creep up the stairs, and then I heard one of the investigators say, can you please give us a sign that you're there? Can you tap on something? So I had a steel flashlight, and I just kind of tapped on the railing twice. Then all of a sudden she's like, oh, my God, thank you so much. That's so wonderful. Thank you for communicating with me. So I ran downstairs trying not to laugh. Well, the two homeowners are down there cracking up, and I had to ask them to be quiet or the gig would be up. So I went back up the stairs again with a pen, and they said, can you give us another sign that you're there? Can you show us something? So I threw the pen up in the air over the railing. It bounced on the hardwood floor.
Oh, boy.
Into the bedroom. There was screaming involved. There was people pooping their pants.
And that was just their own team.
Yeah. So, but what came out of this, which was a good thing, is that they actually, before I said anything to anybody, I mean, Pete knew right away.
I was screaming, Rich!
Yeah. Pete knew based on the timing that there's something up. So the jig was up with him. But they actually went down through, and before they acknowledged that it was a spirit, they did some investigating. They found that it was a pen.
So they actually did the right process.
And Diane identified the pen as her pen that was downstairs next to the DVR station. So the gig was up. So I had to tell everyone.
If that had actually happened, that would have been kind of amazing.
It was a good night. A few team members were scared on various occasions. The other one was when the dog brushed by Alex's leg and gave him a little spook there. That was a good one, too.
Which really surprised me because you could hear it was a pit bull.
Yeah.
The dog was about 100 pounds. You could hear it run up the stairs,
oh boy,
run down the hallway. I mean, I actually saw it, and then it ran by Alex, and he screamed and jumped.
So somehow Alex missed all of that.
I'm not sure what he was doing, but right by him.
I don't know, but the homemade white bread that they had for the sandwiches was phenomenal.
My goodness, that's what we're in this for, the food and the benefits. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, let's stop and talk about that for 1 second. Investigating versus entertainment.
Yes, please. This is a big one.
Because when we did this investigation, a lot of times we go in to help the homeowners or the property owners, and we do some, you know, we do a consultation, we do our research, we go in, we set up, and usually there's a husband and wife or sometimes one person that's there,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they want to participate in the investigation, which is fine.
Right.
I mean, we have no problem with that. But this particular investigation, there was like 6 people there.
Yeah.
They had a spread of food out. Coffee, donuts, sandwiches, chicken wing dip that they made, baked bread. And then, of course, a couple of the homeowners were already drinking. They had a couple in them so far. So when we got there, it was almost like, let's invite our friends over. It's ghost hunting night at the Jones house.
So this was a clear case of somebody who just wanted us to come out for the entertainment value. And now it should be stated that this was like 2 hours away from our location. So this was not just down the road and an easy commute.
Not at all.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. I think that all goes back to the whole, paranormal pop culture aspect of where we are as a society right now with all these TV shows and, you know, how people just really want to be a part of the paranormal. They see it on TV. They see it happening around them. It all goes back to that same thing we've experienced many times before where people actually want their homes to be haunted. They have every known paranormal book, every known paranormal movie, magazine, everything. And they call us in with all sorts of claims, which we automatically assume, you know, there may be something there. And then, you know, once we realize what's going on, it becomes a matter of a night of entertainment for the homeowner as opposed to a night of serious investigating.
But in this case, too, I mean, it actually worked out. There was actually genuine activity going on in the house. I mean, it was experienced by us. You could tell that the animals, they've always said that the animals stare blankly into the space or in down the hallways or in rooms. Hey, chicken wing dip, sandwiches, donuts.
Well, of course, we're all about the food, but, you know, with the 6 people there. So I guess the moral of the story here is that if anybody out there is thinking about having a group of paranormal investigators come to your house, you know, it's entertaining for you, of course, unless you have serious life-threatening issues that you're trying to address. But for us, you know, we take it seriously. We want to be there to help you. So you gotta respect the team as much as we respect the homeowner.
Or at least let us know. If you're looking for a party, we could do that too.
That's true. That's true.
We're available for weddings, graduations, and bar mitzvahs.
Yep.
Well, I would have brought my rock band game along with the drum set and the guitars, and we could have really went to town with the whole party. But yeah, we did actually come across some great evidence, and the homeowners actually experienced some of the activity in the house. So it was a great outcome of the event. However, the problem with that is there's too many distractions. When you're trying to set up, you've got people kind of around you, walking over the top of everything, and then obviously making noise. Some lights are on, some TVs are going, and of course they had pets, but to be really honest with you, the two dogs they put in another room, they were very well behaved. I mean, you didn't hear anything out of them at all.
You know, the whole pet issue bothers me a little bit because people know that we're there to do something. So, I don't know, maybe put the pets away. Unless the pets are key to the haunting. You would think you would just leave them somewhere where they wouldn't interact.
Well, I'm a dog lover, so I don't mind the dogs so much, but cats scare the crap out of me. They're so sneaky. Like, we did the investigation up north. You can't hear that cat walking around, and it's pitch black. The next thing you know, something rubs against your leg, and you jump, and it's that cat every time.
Darn cat.
That's why I learned years ago you always carry two pair of underwear with you on an investigation. You never know. Well, Rich, I'm actually looking on the same site you are. Did you see the one up there about the 6-inch alien?
What the heck?
I did. I was looking at it. I was trying to read to see if that was actually something real or not.
I know my perverted mind automatically went somewhere else. Apparently, they did DNA testing on this little 6-inch, what they quote-unquote alien. It's actually a human being that lived for about 8 to 10 years. Found it in the desert of Chile.
6 inches?
Yeah. What's that? Very interesting.
Is there a picture of it?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It's green with an elongated head.
It is not. Is it?
Yeah.
Holy cow, it is. That's amazing. How ridiculous. I mean, the DNA testing alone.
I mean, it's the coolest thing you've ever seen.
It's a little skeleton for those of you who obviously can't see through the radio. And
well, it looks like a keychain.
It looks like, yeah, that's sad. It's weird. It looks like a little baby human with the typical alien head that you would see. You know, paranormal encompasses all things. We, you know, can't discriminate against aliens and UFOs or Sasquatch or any of that stuff. It all falls under the category of paranormal, so got to keep your mind open to it, I guess.
Alienating, was that a pun?
That was no pun.
Paranormal Investigator Radio on BBSRadio.com.
Okay, so we're back. I just came across a very interesting article. For those of you who are fans of the TV show Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International, like many of us are, the producer of the show is a gentleman named Rob Katz. He's actually involved in a production company that actually films the show and helped develop it along its way. There's an interesting article. You can find this at HuffingtonPost.com. It's under the blog section. It's entitled, "Your House is Haunted. Now What? Former Ghost Hunters Executive Producer Gives Advice." So the article is actually advice from Rob Katz, the producer of Ghost Hunters, Ghost Hunters International, in what you should do when your house is haunted. Okay, you ready for this?
Let's go. What's it say?
Okay. RT, Rob Katz, take a step back and take a logical approach. Number one, check for any plumbing or electrical issues in the home. Make sure there are no rodents or other animals living in places you can't see. Makes sense so far?
Sure does.
Also make sure your ventilation systems are clean and working properly. Things like carbon monoxide and other pollutants can affect how you are feeling in your home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dave, you're a tech guy. What is your thoughts? Chime in on that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to first go through all the logical, rational explanations, and usually a lot of these hauntings take place in a home. So you first have to look at the structure of the home, and then you have to look at any mechanical systems of the home. And once you rule those things out, you know, then you can move forward from there.
Well, a lot of people say that they've heard things in their house or they smell foul odors.
Sure.
And right away they think it's something paranormal because they can't just figure it out on their own.
That's right. And most people don't realize how houses really work. I mean, it's an envelope, and there's a lot of individual subsystems inside the house. And over the years, things accumulate. Dust accumulates, smells accumulate. You know, there's air currents. There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, invisible to our eye, which can cause a lot of these, you know, phenomena.
Or as my dad used to say, when you hear a creak in the middle of the night, it's just the house
settling.
It's
the house settling.
It's the house settling.
It's the walls.
This is the second one. I'm going to ask Pete to chime in on this. Number two, set up cameras to see if anything strange occurs when you're not there.
People always ask us the question, why do we investigate at nighttime? Well, it's easier to see ghosts at nighttime because the equipment we use are either infrared or full color spectrum. But a lot of times we've even done that where we'll go in during midday, set the cameras up, leave the place, let things settle down, and just let the cameras roll for 12, 15 hours by themselves. If it's residual, you're going to catch something because it's just going to play that endless loop. And then when we go back in to break the cameras down, we usually investigate for another hour or two, try to stir some stuff up in a respectful way. Just our presence there and just asking questions is usually enough to stir up activity. Like we always tell people, if you've been dead for 200 years and all of a sudden there's a group of people here that can communicate with you, I'm sure even the most hardcore spirit will turn into a chatty Cathy.
Very well put. I know some of the investigations that we've actually done, at the very end of the investigation, we'll do what we call dead time, where we'll let the equipment roll, but we'll just kind of all sit in some respective location and be quiet for about a half hour and do nothing but just observe. We figure that we stirred things up. Let's see if there's anything that that we can capture just by remaining completely silent. So we've done that in a few of our investigations as well. Let's move on to number three. This is from Robert Katz. And Rob's advice is well-researched after exploring nearly 300 haunted locations while being in charge of Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International. So here's number three. Get a digital recorder to see if you can pick up any sounds or voices. What do you think of that, guys?
Yeah. I mean, that's something that we always do. We always say that about 99% of the stuff that we get on an investigation is audio. So an audio recorder is definitely the way to go if you're, you know, going to be starting out looking for anything paranormal. It's very rare to get anything on video or in photographs. Things moving on their own, it's just very rare activity. However, EVPs and all that, audio type stuff, that's definitely the way to go.
Well, sometimes you can hear them with a set of headphones, or sometimes you can hear it right on the recorder itself.
Yep.
But sometimes you need to get a software like Audacity to run it through,
right,
to actually tweak
amplify
the levels in
bit.
Order to amplify it to actually hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you recorded something you didn't hear anything with the naked ear doesn't mean that there's something not there.
Correct.
Moving on to number four, see if there is a pattern or when the activity occurs. Many times what people experience is a residual haunt, and those cannot hurt you. So, Pete, what's our definition of a residual haunt?
The way that's termed is basically something that's frozen in time and just repeats endlessly.
Like a tape recorder.
Yes, like you see the old lady walk through the wall. The wall wasn't there when she lived there. Perhaps it was a doorway or a room or something, and it just plays nonstop. No rhyme or reason. She goes about her business or whatever it is. Particular spirit is, does, it just stuck in a loop. Nobody really knows why or how it imprinted on time, but it's one of those mysteries we hope to solve.
Now, Dave and Pete actually came up with something that can be used for this, about the patterns that are developing, and that's a book that the two of you authored called The Logbook of Paranormal Activity.
That's right. Very often when people ask us what they can do in their own home to, you know, try and help remedy the paranormal activity happening there. We tell them that the safest way for them is to keep a log of all the activity that goes on. And although many groups, you know, state that that's good advice, nobody has ever actually given guidelines as to what the log should contain, how it should be written, documented. So we created a 366-day journal, which includes questions and spaces for responses for pretty much every aspect of the natural environment at that particular time, just to help create a snapshot of, you know, what happened, who was there, what it was doing outside, where you were in the house or location.
I guess what we're basing that on, in the UFO community, they have something developed by Professor Hynek in Valley. I can't think of his first name, I'm sorry. He had something called the Source Reliability Code, in which they gauge the reliability of not only the site, the person seeing it, and are there any natural phenomena to explain what's going on. Now, that's used heavily in the ufology, but something like that really doesn't exist in the paranormal field,
right,
which is what we're trying to move investigators towards.
A unified approach.
Which goes back, was it a party when you've seen this happening?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a respectable person or somebody who's been doing this for years where they have a credible, say, like John Zaffis, that
true,
would be a credible witness.
Mm-hmm.
The site, is it alleged for years to have been haunted, or is it just something like we've been on many times?
Mm-hmm.
There's every video, book,
yep,
movie known to man about the paranormal. I mean, and that's all part of the scientific approach of trying to bring things to a documented level that we can look back, form case studies,
yep,
and do lots of boring things with it.
So pretty much look for patterns.
Right,
and
right.
And if nothing else, you can use the logbook to prop up a piece of furniture.
It works well for coffee tables. The fifth and final one here of what is the best thing for someone to do if they think their house may be haunted? Again, we're talking about points from Rob Katz, the former executive producer of Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International. Number five, and this one's my favorite, and I'll chime in on this one. Contact a local ghost group for help. All else fails. Folks, if you believe you have a paranormal problem and you've gone through some of these steps here, which is actually a pretty good five-step guideline, very simple, very straightforward, the thing to do is get in touch with a paranormal group, one that's reliable, one that's known in the community, such as Rome Investigators of the Paranormal. We do a lot of investigations. We do a lot of events in the community so people know who we are and trust us. Get in touch with us. If anything, I mean, we can maybe answer some of the questions, come out, do a consultation for you, get the facts, possibly debunk some things, and all else fails, if we believe there really is something going on that we can't explain or we need to observe further in order to explain it, then we can always set up an investigation.
And, you know, we always tell people, if you don't have experience investigating the paranormal, it's always very dangerous to do your own investigations, even and especially in your own house. We always advise against it. So while this is a good guide for, exploring things a little bit, we recommend that people do not investigate their own homes because it could actually stir up more activity since it is your personal residence and you are the one investigating it, and that could just lead to more problems. If you suspect that something's going on, definitely contact a group.
We're always available again. Anyone out there, if you'd like to ask questions or talk to us online, you can dial in at 1-888-429-5471. Or if you like using Skype, you can go to BBS Radio 2. And we'd be interested to hear what you have to say. Or send it via ESP.
Whether you're an investigator, enthusiast, or ethereal spirit, we are bringing you the information from this realm and beyond.
With your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeGrasse.
Okay, we're back. So what we're going to talk about now is a piece of technology. Of course, as you know, technology is near and dear to my heart. And the one we're going to talk about tonight is the thermal imaging camera. This is one that all teams enjoy. We enjoy ours, right?
Dude, that stuff is the bomb.
Yeah, we've heard that a couple times. We have two thermal imaging cameras, and they really do a great job in helping to show temperature variations in an environment. So let's get right into it. Visible light cameras are the standard type of cameras that we all know and love, but they have limitations. The electromagnetic spectrum is far wider than we could see with our eyes or with traditional cameras. To see beyond the range of our limited vision, which encompasses roughly the 450 to 750 nanometer range of the electromagnetic spectrum, we need to rely on specialized cameras ranging into the IR spectrum, and these cameras are usually known as night vision cameras, as well as cameras that can see down into the UV spectrum. These are normally known as full spectrum cameras, and they don't just focus on UV. They can also see the IR spectrum and the visible light spectrum as well. A very important tool in the paranormal world is the thermal imaging camera. Believe it or not, the thermal imaging camera is just a fancy IR camera. You see, thermal energy is easily sensed through variations in the infrared spectrum. Some of the higher-end specialized infrared cameras or thermal cameras can see out to about 14,000 nanometers. As amazing as it may be, the technology that facilitates thermal imaging was developed in the late 1820s. Well, that technology formed the underpinnings of the sensors that facilitate thermal imaging, the actual imaging component didn't come into play until the late 1940s. This technology took roughly an hour to scan a single scene into a visual image, and it was a joint effort between Texas Instruments and the U.S. military. Let's fast forward to the 1990s, and thermal imaging makes its way out of the military theater into civilian use. Modern thermal imaging systems come in two varieties, cooled and uncooled detectors. Ours are really cool. The cooled detectors are encapsulated in a vacuum chamber, and they're plumbed to liquid nitrogen lines. These are obviously for scientific applications and can achieve image resolutions many dozens of times greater than the well-known commercial uncooled models. Infrared energy encompasses radiation from gamma rays, X-rays, ultraviolet, narrow band of visible light, infrared, terahertz waves, microwaves, and radio waves, just to name a few. These are all related and differentiated in their length of their wave, or their wavelength. All objects emit a certain amount of black body radiation as a function of their temperatures. Generally speaking, the higher an object's temperature is, the more infrared radiation is emitted as black body radiation. A thermal camera can detect this radiation in a way similar to the way an ordinary camera detects visible light. It works even in total darkness because ambient light level does not matter with regard to temperature. This makes it useful for rescue operations in smoke-filled buildings and underground. That's why a lot of special forces people use these.
Fire departments too.
That's right. Images from infrared cameras tend to have a single color channel because the cameras generally use a sensor that does not distinguish wavelengths of infrared radiation. It's either there or it's not there. Color cameras require a more complex construction to differentiate wavelength and color because it has less meaning outside the normal visible spectrum because of the differing wavelengths. They don't map uniformly into the system of color vision that we use as humans. Sometimes these monochromatic images are displayed in pseudo-color, where changes in color are used rather than changes in intensity to display changes in the signal. This is useful because although humans have much greater dynamic range in intensity detection than color overall, the ability to see fine intensity differences in bright areas is pretty limited. This technique is called density slicing. In the computer world, where much of the processing takes place for creating the images captured on a thermal sensor, this technique is also known as false color or false coloration. You see that a lot on the TV shows, all those fun different colors that represent the different temperatures. For use in temperature measurement, the brightest or the warmest parts of the image are customarily colored white. Intermediate temperatures, reds and yellows, and the dimmest, coolest parts are black. A scale should be shown next to a false color image to relate colors to temperatures, and on most modern false color cameras, they do have this scale. It should be noted that the resolution of a thermal imaging camera is much less than optical cameras. Mostly, these thermal imaging systems only give about 160 by 120 pixels, or the really higher-end ones are 320 by 240 pixels. Now, that's just the consumer cameras. That's not the scientific images or scientific systems. But thermographic cameras are much more expensive than their visible spectrum counterparts. As you can imagine, they're far more complicated. Guys, what do we think about the thermal systems?
I don't know. I've seen Pete on a thermal imaging camera.
The sweat that I can produce creates a spectrum you wouldn't believe.
Now, you said the brightest is white, right?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, he's just a big white mirage.
I yawned one time, and it looked like the sun rising.
Oh, goodness. I mean, thermal imaging cameras are great for paranormal investigating, but, man, they're great at a party, too.
Well, I guess we should point out the ones that we have are actually the fire department models, which don't use the false coloration.
Right.
Uses the grayscaling.
Yeah, we have the military grade ones, and the brightest colors are should be white, but on our systems they're orange, and that represents the hottest colors, and the darkest colors are blue. Or, I'm sorry, black. Everything else is just a grayscale image.
In an incredible range on that. I think the manual said like 1,000 feet.
Yeah, usually most systems go to about 400 meters or 1,200 feet, so that's right about there.
Well, we've used them in our investigations, and the one that we found the most amount of evidence with, but we didn't have any recording equipment hooked up at the time, was the investigation up north where we actually got the handprint on Pete's back.
Right.
Which was bright yellow. I mean, if we could have captured that and recorded that, that would have been something absolutely amazing on the evidence profile.
Visit us online. Paranormal Investigator Radio.com.
And we're back.
Back to what?
Back to the show.
Where am I? You believe this paranormal stuff?
Sometimes.
Only when they have tomato pie, chicken wing dip.
Tasty food.
The chicken wing dip was awesome, by the way.
You guys know me. I spend hours perusing eBay for God knows what. I can't afford anything.
Absolutely.
I've been seeing a disturbing trend on there of items being sold that are labeled haunted, especially dolls. I hate them things.
I wonder where they got that idea from.
I don't know, but we have a little computer screen up here. I know you can't see it at home, but look at the prices. Some of these things are selling for $500, $150, because the eyes follow you, or they named it, and it's spooky.
These are all, like, porcelain-style Victorian dolls.
I've been an investigator for 30 years, and I've began selling these items. Well, right off the bat, that tells you something.
Yeah.
It's scary. I mean, I know I don't personally like clowns, even though people call me one. And even a few years back, I remember looking at this one item that was supposedly taken from an exorcism where the priest bound the thing into a ring or whatever the specific item
God.
Was. And it sold for thousands of dollars. And I'm thinking, why would you want that?
That's ridiculous.
Especially if that came from a true exorcism.
Not in my house.
You know, there was an episode of, what's that? That paranormal show on TV that it's really realistic. I'm drawing a blank now.
Ghost Stories?
No.
Haunting Collector?
No.
Tapes?
No, no, it's that
paranormal thing.
No,
got to be Deep South Paranormal.
No, it's not Deep South Paranormal. Anyway, this is one where people send in their stories and they dramatize the stories and make them very scary.
Paranormal Witness.
That's it. Paranormal Witness. Thank you. Last season on Paranormal Witness, there was an episode where an old man purchased something at an estate sale that was supposedly haunted, and after about 3-4 years owning it, his health failed, his wife left him, his life was ruined, he went bankrupt, and he felt that it was all because of this one particular object. So he put it up on some want ad in the paper, and a middle-aged man bought it, and in the ensuing year, his family fell apart, his job fell apart, his health fell apart, so he put the thing up on eBay, where two college students bought it, and through the process of that transaction, the college dorm where the kids live ended up, something bad happened. I don't know if it burned or there was possessions taking place. And then they sold it to an actual paranormal researcher or a refinisher, antique refinisher. And he ended up burying it under a basement. And after his life started falling apart, it was a rental property. He buried it under the basement and left it there for like 10 years. And he just had so much guilt about it, he went and dug it up and left it in his house. And his whole world fell apart, but he felt so guilty about selling that to somebody he wouldn't give it up. Very weird, these haunted objects.
And that's why I don't play with dolls.
Well, this wasn't a doll. This was like a box, like an old jewelry box or something. But
boxes.
It was said to have a bound spirit in it.
Sometimes that CPR doll just looks at you in the right way, and you just want to make out with it.
Well, you know, whatever.
But I mean, there is a lot of merit to haunted objects. I mean,
you'll look at John Zaffis.
If you remember back, I think it was winter of 2009, I purchased a group of Nazi medals. The price was right. How could I not have bought it? I'm into military history and all that stuff. Within that four-week period, I was almost financially devastated. The wash machine started on fire. Thank God I was home at the time. I would have burned the house down. Then the dryer went. Then the hot water tank in the house blew. Then the car went. Then I fell down the stairs and got hurt. Finally, after I didn't have any money, I had to sell some possessions. I sold the medals. Well, life really didn't get better, but I mean, the immediate danger stopped. But yeah, I do attribute. I mean, it was just either a case of extremely bad luck or something that negative was held on to just based on where it came from.
Yeah.
I mean, World War II, Nazi.
I think if anything had some bad juju hooked up to it.
I'm not a big believer in good luck or bad luck. I think things happen for a reason, and that objects can have things attached to it that can have a negative impact on people's lives. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, I don't know anybody who's had a wash machine start on fire.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
a new one.
Water, right?
That's unique.
That's interesting. Hey, I came across an article called House of Horrors when I was doing some research on online, and this is interesting. I don't know how many people out there in the listening audience are fans of American Horror Story. It's an interesting show, but you'll kind of enjoy this story. A Pennsylvania woman sued the seller of the home she purchased several years ago for not disclosing its gruesome past. The home, which Janet Milken purchased in 2007, was the location of a brutal murder-suicide in February of 2006. In October, the 31st, no less, right? The same year, a couple bought the house knowing its bloody past. But when they sold it to Milliken in June of the following year, they did not disclose the deaths. So in 2012, Milliken was shocked to learn the house's history and filed a suit against the sellers and their real estate agent. The state court sided with the former owner, saying that the law in Pennsylvania does not require full disclosure. Now, that brings me to this next paragraph I want to discuss with you in the state of New York, because that's where we're based in. New York requires that the seller disclose if a house is potentially haunted, okay? There's a case of July 1991 involved present owners suing past owners for not informing them the house was prone to paranormal activity. But in Idaho, there is a ghost in the attic statute, okay, that went into effect in 1998, which states that neither a home seller nor the agent are responsible for disclosing possible haunting unless the buyer specifically writes a request for such disclosure.
That's incredible.
And that's why we're always careful with what we do, and this is a word of advice to other groups out there, especially in New York. It's called the New York State Stigmatized Property Law. You don't want to put the stigma on a house that it's haunted.
Don't ever call a location haunted. You could say that there's possible paranormal activity. You could disclose what you found, but you cannot say that XYZ is haunted.
Not a good thing if you ever want to sell the house again. Because in New York State, again, you have to disclose it.
Yep.
Didn't the Amityville house go through this a few years
ago? Something similar to it. And, you know, it makes me wonder, with that ghost in the attic clause, whenever you hear very odd things like that that are incredibly detailed and specific, you have to wonder what led up to the creation of such a clause like that.
Well, you know, you talk to some people, the paranormal ghost is all hogwash. It doesn't exist. Yet we actually have laws and statutes that require people to disclose this kind of thing. So if it didn't exist, and you know, like Bigfoot and UFOs, you know, why are we writing laws for this? I mean, that'll be the next thing. We'll have a law to actually protect Bigfoot now.
There is. Oh,
yes,
where?
Yes, actually, there's.
It was just on TV a couple days ago.
Is it Iceland?
Do Oregon?
They have laws protecting trolls and
fairies? Yeah, but there's also a place,
Oregon.
It could be Oregon, where they actually have a law stating that there's a preservation act in place for Sasquatch. Any again, Sasquatch you find.
This stuff doesn't exist, right?
But there's laws for it.
Well, that's human nature. Let's go find it, kill it, and then study it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, but that leads me to the next point of discussion. I follow a lot of the Bigfoot TV shows, and I do a lot of research online about Bigfoot. And many times, the witnesses that see Bigfoot are actually hunters, okay?
Yeah.
Now, these hunters are armed. Many of them have handguns and shotguns or rifles. Yet no one, to my knowledge, that I've come across has actually shot one.
Well, you know, I think I would be kind of scared to try and shoot a Bigfoot, because what happens if, A, you miss, or B, what happens if your bullet doesn't take him down? It's going to be like that beef jerky commercial. Sasquatch is going to come right after you.
There you go. But the other thing is, think about it. If you're in the woods and you have a gun, and all of a sudden you come across a tall, man-like figure with arms walking upright, the first thing you want to do is you want to shoot it, because what if it is someone dressed in a costume?
Yep.
That's murder. Second of all, if it wasn't and actually is a Bigfoot, I think as humans, instinctively, we see something that's like us, we're hesitant to shoot it.
Yeah.
If it was on all fours, like a coyote or a wolf, we would shoot it.
Yep.
But since it's walking like a human being, I think we're thinking to ourselves, even though if whoever it is believes to themselves it is Bigfoot, they're not going to shoot it because it resembles so much of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they stink, too. They have an incredible stench.
Yeah, they have a unique smell.
Methane.
No, I think it's like...
So you might want to be careful about firing guns off if it is methane.
Yeah.
But too with it, I mean, with the Bigfoot sightings, they say UFO sightings go hand in hand, especially in New York.
That's true. Any place where there's a large Air Force base or a large Air Force presence, for some reason, there's always a lot of stories. I don't think it all has to do with military aircraft, but I don't know what the tie-in could be.
Bigfoot's are the pilots.
I know we've been talking about that Bigfoot expedition. We just have to plan
it. Yeah, we haven't done it yet.
We're in the perfect location for it.
We are.
We're almost near Whitehall. Or
the base of the Adirondack Mountains, baby.
Yep.
Someday.
Paranormal Investigator Radio. Hosted by the investigators of the paranormal. Visit us online at www.investigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
So, hey everyone, we are back. This is Rich, Peter, and Dr. Dave for another edition of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Hope you've been enjoying the show so far tonight. We take a little different approach tonight. Normally we have a guest speaker that comes on, or guest caller, if you will. But we had someone scheduled, and due to a last-minute issue, we had to postpone it. So we promised the next episode that we will have someone on to talk to. But we're also reaching out not only to people in the paranormal, but we also want to bring you some people that are based in the UFO realm of the paranormal and Bigfoot as well. So if you're into crypto, UFOs, or ghosts, we hope to offer somebody something for everybody. So,
heck, someday we'll even get into parapsychology, ESP, astral travel, and all the other good stuff.
Yes, ESPN is next.
Yes, we have ESPN. All right,
I had a case of that this morning.
What do we think of some of the upcoming shows that are coming back for the season on TV? I know Taps is coming back pretty soon.
I don't know. Haunted Collector's been phenomenal this season.
It has. The evidence they found is ridiculous.
Well, they have an interesting niche with the show. I mean, they kind of went in the direction of, instead of trying to debunk, they kind of went into trying to find an object, which is kind of a different level than Taps did. I mean, there's no one more that appreciates the TV show Ghost Hunters than I do, being a fan since the first episode.
Right.
And essentially, I like the model of the show, but I think a lot of people have tried to copy it.
Yeah.
You know, and they just haven't been able to get it right. There's a certain chemistry with the Taps group that people can't replicate. So the people who did Haunted Collector decided, instead of competing with that, create something that's different.
But I gotta say, those the redneck hillbillies there.
Oh boy, Deep South.
Deep South Paranormal. I mean, that's a great show for comic value. I equate them to like the Duck Dynasty of the paranormal world.
The fact that he put that frog in his mouth.
Yeah.
And sucked the air out of it.
It's disgusting.
From an entertainment perspective, I love the show. From a paranormal investigative perspective, science, I don't think it holds a lot of merit.
I mean, the only place I've ever heard of a gree-gree stick was in reading. I was actually surprised to see someone walking around with them.
But, you know, it has to be said that just because we don't understand it, or, you know, that particular technique, doesn't mean that it's not valid. I think we would have to do a lot more exploration with it first, but it would be nice to see some more gree-gree sticks out in the paranormal field.
There you go.
Can I just go off on a mini rant?
Yeah, go ahead.
But I understand we debunk. We have to debunk. I mean, like the incident with the pen, I mean, we had to question the timing and stuff like that. But the extreme debunking is something I've never understood.
Yeah.
It's like you spend thousands and thousands of dollars in equipment, man hours. Why even bother? If you don't believe in it, nothing's going to make you believe in it.
That's
You're
right.
just wasting your time and money. It's sort of like telling kids Santa Claus doesn't exist. That's the mentality I get from that.
You need to keep an open mind, I think. And even watching these shows like Deep South Paranormal, I have a certain appreciation for it because I think you have to, I mean, everyone has their view on how things are done and what equipment is to be used and how it's to be used. But I think if you have an open mind, you can learn a lot of things. I know especially when you're looking for a paranormal group to get involved with, say, for instance, you always want to get involved with a group of people that are different than you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to have a group full of people just like you.
Right.
You're never going to get anywhere, so you'll have the same views. When I came aboard at RIP, I mean, Pete being the history buff, I've learned so much from Pete about history. But not only learned about history, but how to take history and how to actually use it for applications in the paranormal.
It's very important.
It's great to research it and read all these books, but he can actually take it and apply it to real-life situations
mm-hmm.
and for us to help find evidence, to find background. And it just amazes me that the people, when he reveals information to them, they just completely surprised that they didn't know anything about their home,
yep.
the people that live there, the history
mm-hmm.
or the area or anything. So, and then with Dr. Dave, I've learned so much about equipment. I mean, I knew some basic operations of certain equipment, but you've kind of gave me some insight of how things are done and when and where not to use certain things, and also how to understand equipment, you know, like thermal imaging cameras and IR and the different light spectrums and stuff like that. So, I mean, by having different people that you're working with different ways that they research and investigate, I mean, it's just it makes you, I think, a better investigator. That's why the Deep South, and you watch these shows like Deep South, Haunted Collector, Ghost Hunters, you take little bits and pieces from there, you know, you might not agree with, but try it sometime and see what kind of results you get.
I've learned manners from Deep South Paranormal.
Oh, very well mannered.
When he tucked his
you
beard
have a long beard,
the
tuck it in.
Shirt so it wouldn't dip into his suit.
That's right.
That's good wholesome.
ZZ Top meets Ghost Hunting.
You know, though, I've had the same experience with these guys for years and years and years. Skeptics, hardcore skeptics will come up, or I should just say non-believers, come up and they say, show me something that's going to make me believe in the paranormal. And the very simple, long and short answer of that is, I can't. There's nothing that I could show you.
Agree.
No matter what it is. If you do not believe in the paranormal and you will not keep an open mind to it, there's nothing in the world, even if a ghost comes and slaps you right in the face, that will make you a believer.
And we've had team members like that. And
yep.
then usually when they've left the group, it's because something happened on an investigation and they couldn't hold on to that belief anymore that nothing exists.
Yep.
Well, you guys know that I was like that. I talking to guys like John Zaffis and Jason Halls and all them, listening to their stories of the years that I've worked with them and thinking to myself, you know what, I'm going to go do this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I hear all this stuff about, you know, John Zaffis talking about people levitating and their eyes rolling back and all this demonic stuff. So I figured it was time to get involved in the group and go out and see it for myself. So I was skeptic, the fact that I didn't believe it until I saw it, but at the same time, I had an open mind. So if I did see it, I could appreciate and understand it. And that's what happened.
Yep.
It was that shadow you saw, wasn't it?
It was. It was a shadow in that Cameron in church. Clear as day. And I even asked you what you saw before I even said what I saw. And the way you explained it was exactly what I saw.
And I'm sure there's more than a rational explanation
mm-hmm.
that someone can come up with, but with everything, you have to take a little bit of the paranormal on the faith aspect.
See, on the TV listing this week, I happened to see Fact or Faked. They're doing all their reruns again. That's a good show. And Destination Truth is also back on there.
Mm-hmm.
They're both very good shows. They show both sides of this. The the skeptical approach and the hardcore research and debunking. But, you know, when something happens, you always got to keep an open mind. And that's what they do on those shows, too.
I'll give Josh Gates and his team having stones the size of Bismarck, North Dakota over there for going into Chernobyl to do a paranormal investigation.
Or yeah, those guys are hardcore. I mean,
deep caves with spiders the size of basketballs. You're out of your mind.
The scariest thing I've ever seen in my years of investigation is the homeowner. That's the scariest thing that I have actually seen at all. But these guys on Josh Gates' team, they Destination Truth, I mean, they go into dangerous places where there's actual, you know, creatures and crocodiles and killer spiders, and they try to gather evidence.
And, you know, that's a good point. Of all these teams and all these TV shows that go out into these obscure locations where there's, like, man-eating everything, they never come across any. I don't know if it's if they have a huge security team with them or what, or if they're just incredibly lucky.
Well, you can go. There's a website called parahauntnews.com, which I found online. And if you go there, there actually is a page on the site, and I'm pulling up right now. It's called that's Mysterious Vortexes. That's not it. But they have a page on there called the Top 10 Most Famous Ghost Pictures of All Time. And if you don't believe in the paranormal, take a look at these 10 photos and look for yourself. We've got the Brown Lady of Raymond Hall.
Early 1900s one.
The Hampton Courthouse. We've got the newbie church monk, the bedridden boy, his favorite chair. So, I mean, these are photos that have been, I'm sure, scrutinized by many paranormal fans and non to see if they're actually real or not, but take a look at it. Again, it's parahauntnews.com, and take a look and see what you think. And if you don't believe in the paranormal, take a long look at it. I mean, we welcome skeptics here on this show.
If you have questions, news, requests, new technology you would like us to review, team updates, event updates, or if you would like to be a guest on our show, email us at submit@paranormalinvestigatorradio.com.
Okay, we're back. A couple last thoughts on tonight's show here. The group RIP is doing an event the last weekend, June, I believe it's the 28th and 29th. It's called HalbertCon. The event will take place at the Halbert House, which is a historical building in downtown Boonville, New York. You can look it online. You can Google Halbert House. And why so much attention to the Halbert House? Well, not only is it a historic landmark and it has loads of paranormal activity, but it was also featured in, I believe, season 2 of The Haunted Collector when John Zaffis and his group came in and did an investigation there. Now, the event's going to be weekend long. We're bringing John Zaffis in from Haunted Collector to do some workshops. He's also going to do a lecture and a ghost hunt with the VIP ticket holders and the golden ticket holders. So we hope to see you there. Check out the Facebook page of Rome Investigators of the Paranormal on Facebook, and you can get tickets from there or go to RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com.
And just a reminder, you could always check us out on ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com. Any last thoughts, guys?
Buy your tickets for HalbertCon.
Do we have any rooms left, or did we just sell out the last of what was left?
Well, that's what I'm going to go figure out tonight after the show. I'm trying to balance it out. I think we're getting really low on the rooms, but we still have VIP tickets and general admission available.
So I'd avoid disappointment. Go out there and get your ticket while you can.
Make sure you check us out, RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com.
See you at the Rumble House.
Thank you for listening tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stay spooky.
Join us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.